from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with fantasy artist Lydia Burrus about a new exhibition of work by other fantasy artists that she's organizing this summer.
I'll get a preview of the first half of Theater on the Square's new season.
And I'll find out about a new project connecting art, science, and our waterways. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Bazaar Bazaar is being billed as an alternative art extravaganza. It will feature local and national fantasy artists at the Indianapolis Arts Garden from July 30th through August 2nd, conveniently at the same time as Gen Con. Travis DiNicola spoke with artist and organizer Lydia Burrus about the show.
Lydia, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Greetings, Travis. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. You are very welcome. I've been looking forward to this. When we've had you on the show before, you've talked mainly about your own work as a fantasy artist, but this time I'm going to be talking about that, but also this cool show you're organizing with lots of other artists,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Bazaar Bazaar.
Yes, the full name being Bazaar Bazaar, an alternative art extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. So what is that? So is it all fantasy art or other types of art as well?
The springboard is fantasy, but it goes beyond that.
Okay.
I don't even know where to start. So I guess, but there's 10 artists and it, we'll talk a little bit in a minute about Gen Con because that's where it started.
Sure.
So fantasy, gaming, pop culture, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's me, Kathleen Hardy, Brent Barrett, Tony Steele, Kathleen Summers, Billy Tackett, Beth Zeigelwitz, Tori Wires, Catalyst, William Stolpin.
Now, are these a combination of local and regional artists? Or?
It's about half of them are local.
Mm-hmm.
Half of them are from outside of Indiana.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. And I've been saying fantasy art. Is that the right term?
Fantasy, fantastic. It works. I'm fine with either. I think I mentioned last time maybe even there's this movement to start calling it fantastic because there is a bit of a preconceived notion people have with fantasy. It's different with everybody, but there's usually this already set idea as to what fantasy is. And really, it's just something beyond reality.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, that set idea, I mean, often people think fantasy art, is it all going to be dragons and distressed maidens and knights in armor and stuff like that.
Buff warriors and scantily clad women. And,
yes.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's not it.
That is just
That's part of it.
Yeah, that's like 1/16th maybe.
Okay. So what are some other things, just to give our listeners sort of an idea of what we're talking about? I mean, is this also science fiction? Is this...
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I mean, my work, I think of... reality, and I like to push it in another direction. I add psychological elements to it, visions, dreams. I love the idea of dreams, and I bring that into my work. So that's where my work goes on a fantastic...
Kind of surrealistic.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a surreal, and that's definitely fantasy in itself. We have someone who does more almost like children's book illustrations, and that's very fantasy. We have someone doing... clay sculptures, and he does a lot of skulls and dragons and things like that, and sort of I don't know, it's really good. And we have a guy that does dragons as well.
Okay.
William, he's great. I mean, everybody does their own thing. That's a little bit on it's almost less fantasy. We've almost called ourselves bohemians, like just bohemian artists. We're just doing our own thing and having fun, and a lot of it kind of goes in a fantastic angle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So this show is going to be at the Arts Garden downtown at the Indianapolis Arts Garden, running from July 30th through August 2nd, which just happens to correspond with Gen Con.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
There is a reason for that. Well, Okay, so the whole, you know, Bazaar, we're our own beast, and we're very excited to share our work as a group. But to start at the beginning, we have to start with Gen Con, the giant, huge yearly pop culture and gaming convention in Indy, where thousands upon thousands of enthusiasts descend upon the city for 4 days of pure awesome.
Yes.
And Gen Con...
dressed as Wookiees and everything else. And,
it's
and Stormtroopers
wonderful.
And Batman. And it is. It's a ton of fun.
It is so much fun. And it's not just gaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fun to go and people watch and to go inside and go to the vending hall. I mean, there's all sorts of wonderful things that you can buy and see and experience. And then there's, of course, the gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So if people like gaming of any sort, that's what it's mainly about.
Board games, war games,
absolutely.
Role-playing games, computer games, all types of stuff.
It's such a great event, and I've been going
card games
for I think 8 years,
yeah.
And I've been vending for 7 of those years, I believe.
Okay.
I attended once.
By vending, you mean selling your artwork?
Yes, selling my artwork. Mm-hmm. And there is a section of Gen Con which is possibly like maybe 1/10 of the vending hall, which is dedicated to this art alley. There's artists in that art alley, but there's also artists outside of it as well. But it's like smaller booths, and maybe there's about 88 artists.
Mm-hmm.
And Gen Con is getting so big and so popular that it's kind of like all of the artists kept just pre-buying a table, and there would be no room for new blood to come in. And, you know, so I think so this year they wanted to shake things up, try something new. And I can only assume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't there to decide, but they decided to do a jury.
Okay.
And because
first
of
time
it,
that they've done that.
First time they've done that specifically. And a lot of the artists that have been doing it regularly didn't make it in this year. Some did,
okay.
Some didn't.
Some did, but,
tried to get in the main vending hall, which was sold out the day of the show, apparently. So even that, even the big vending hall area, it's so popular. It's sold out right away. And so when the artist found out who was in and who wasn't, I personally was just content to maybe be a booth helper with a friend of mine who did get in.
Okay.
Because I still needed to go. I had clients coming in and stuff, so I had to find a way to be there in some regard. And but there was enough artists that were like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? This is our summer fun. This is our summer income.
Yeah.
And so I said, all right, guys, hang on. I'm local. I'll go ask some questions. And so this is a case of you never know till you ask.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the Arts Council.
Yep.
Talked about the Arts Garden, was curious about that space. You know, most of the places downtown are owned by Gen Con during that week.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, there was nothing going on at the Arts Garden that time. They were kind of keeping it
open.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And a couple days went by after me, you know, figuring stuff out. And I suddenly found myself the coordinator of this 4-day side art show in
the
Arts
awesome.
Garden. Beautiful location.
And the Arts Garden is, you know, it's a great space. And it's run and owned by the Arts Council of Indianapolis. And the Arts Council, you know, exists to support local artists. So that's awesome.
Right, right. And it's, you know, the more people that get involved, the better, I think. You know, people have ideas and they want to do things, and never hesitate to contact the Arts Council to ask about these things. How can you get involved? Where can you have events?
Mm-hmm.
If you have an idea, just present it. Bring it to somebody.
That's really cool. So the timing was great.
Timing is good.
They were supportive. And so I'm guessing this is kind of the first time, though, that you've actually organized a show like this. I mean, you've obviously been working with your own work and stuff, but, you know, to bring together a number of other artists as well.
It's simply a show of this magnitude, I suppose. Yes, this is the biggest thing I've done that seems to be almost flowing by itself. You know, the whole way it feels like I've just sort of been pushed along gently versus, you know, I've tried to organize events in the past and they kind of, you know, fell on my face a couple times. I did successfully curate a fantastic art show, I think, 2 or 3 years ago at the Stutz called Conjure. And that was really fun.
Yeah.
We had a community talk about the importance of fantasy and fantastic art. And so that was really amazing. But yeah, this is like the biggest thing I've tried to organize, and it's going smoothly so far, and
good.
And really excited about it.
So the artists that are involved, they're basically all artists that you knew personally, you knew their work, or how did you decide who was going to be in the show?
Well, the first thing I did was once I found out we could use the venue and we got that sorted out, I had maybe about 5 artists specifically that were pretty keen on the idea of being involved. And so I tried to look at who else got cut out, who else had tried to vend in Gen Con and couldn't, or who else, you know, wanted to or maybe just didn't do it this time.
Yeah.
That here's another opportunity for us to show our work. And so that's sort of how I decided on, you know, who was going to be around. And then I kind of looked around to see who else would be good for the location and the crowd. And it all happened very organically, you know. As I started filling up, I would send out calls for artists, but, you know, get on the waiting list in case someone couldn't make it, or, you know, or if someone decided to pop out. And we had some people come in, come out, come back in, and
sure,
you know, but pretty much everyone that's on there is on board, and we've been chatting every day on everything we're doing. We have postcards for it. We even bought little badge ribbons that say BB Alt Art X, sort of an abbreviation for our show, and we... at Gen Con, you'll see a bunch of people with ribbons attached to their badges.
Sure.
And those are usually related to games they've played.
Yeah.
And you see them on almost everybody walking around. And so we thought it'd be fun
to have our own
badge ribbon. Mm-hmm. And when people say, hey, what's that? They could say, oh, there's an art show in the Arts Garden. Go check it out. And it's free to the public.
Right. So, the space is open, free to the public. Work is for sale?
Yes, work is for sale. All 10 artists are going to have a booth, and we're going to be there all 4 days of the con. The hours are a little different. So Thursday, it's 10 to 7. We're going to try to stay open an hour after the main vending hall so that we can catch people that are leaving.
Sure.
And so Thursday, 10 to 7 p.m., Saturday, 10 to 4. Actually, that's Thursday and Friday, 10 to 7. Saturday is 10 to 4. We have to pack up a little early, but that gives us a chance to go wander around. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday is 12 to 4 p.m.
Nice. So. And this is also a cool thing, too, because I know a lot of people in Indianapolis are always curious about Gen Con and want to come down and, you know, sort of walk around and check things out. But, if you haven't, you know, bought your pass, you know, whether a day pass or a weekend pass, you know, they're often gone. And so you may, you know, miss out. But, you know, here's an event where people can walk in anytime and check out what's going on at the Arts Garden and experience some of that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And check out some cool art and...
And music.
And music, that's right. You've got some... Yeah, tell me about that.
The coordinator of the Arts Garden, Mike Prusa, he's a wonderful guy. And he is organizing music. I don't know all of the music that's going to be there, but around afternoon, I think about 12:15 on every day or nearly every day. But I do know that on Friday, I believe... yes, Friday, Il Troubadour is going to be there dressed as their Klingons.
You know? Awesome.
So they have they almost have like two different things going on with their band, but I love it, and I've seen them do their gig like that a couple times. It's always so amusing. And I think on Sunday there'll be the Pops Orchestra, and they're going to be doing samples of sci-fi fantasy music. 12:15.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's nice. Another draw too.
Yeah. So music, art, sounds like a great time.
Absolutely. It's going to be so much fun. You know, one door closes, another one opens wide, and you know, we harbor no ill will or anything. I mean, you guys are fans of Gen Con, and we have good relations with the arts coordinators of the art show and everything, and we're just excited that we found a way to make our own thing happen, and who knows, it might happen next year too. We're kind of keep that open.
Very cool, Lydia. Congratulations on organizing this and putting this together. And I wish you the best of luck with it. Sounds like it's going to be a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Everybody should come down and check it out and grab a ribbon, and it'll be fun.
That sounds good.
Travis DiNicola with fantasy artist Lydia Burris. The show she's organizing is called The Bizarre Bazaar, and it'll take place at the Indianapolis Arts Garden from July 30th through August 2nd. For more information, visit lydiaburris.com. That's LYDIABURRIS, lydiaburris.com. You can also search for Bizarre Bazaar on Facebook. Listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Theater on the Square is anything but square in its programming for the 2015-2016 season. Sharon Gamble invited Lori Raffel to tell us all about the first half of the Tots season, from Poe songs to reindeer monologues.
So I have to say, this is a really ambitious season. T-
tell me about what did you program first, or what was kind of your organizing principle about this season?
Well, I decided that it would be artist-driven.
Okay.
I think that there are Indianapolis is unique in that there are so many amazing artists that are in between the level of equity, or maybe they don't want to be equity, mm-hmm. and community. And these are theater artists and directors and actors who have a bucket list. And I started asking a year ago, what are the things that you would love to be involved with here in Indy, but you just haven't found a place that's willing to take this project on? And so that's when I ask for submissions from directors all across the, you know, all of Indy. And I got over 30 proposals.
Wow.
Which was very exciting. And I chose based upon director as much as the show. Directors who I had either worked with before that I really wanted to work with again, or that I had seen their work, really admired it, and had never gotten a chance to work with them. And some who are maybe not with a certain theater, mm-hmm. and they're kind of looking for a theater, which was exciting, you know, for Tots, because that's what we're looking for, is people looking for a
home.
Yes.
Yeah. For somebody who doesn't know why this might be, explain why somebody might not want to join Equity.
Well, I think a lot of, you know, artists have other jobs, and so they know that they're never going to pursue full-time acting or make a living from it. And also they might have benefits elsewhere and they don't need the equity benefits. And also there are so many places here in town like Tots that in general we do not work with equity. So this is a place where anyone can come and work with us.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, IRT or Phoenix or ATI, where the majority of people they work with are equity.
Mm-hmm. So you're starting your season with an original show written by locals?
Yes.
And did it have a workshop or one production before?
It had a workshop here, and then it had a production in Chicago.
Okay.
But also they've made some changes. It's written by Lynn Leupold, and Kenny Shepherd is her partner in that, Red Boat Productions. And I started talking to them probably last fall. I really admire what they do. They did 465 Sex Drive, which started off as a fringe show and then went on from there and really had quite an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're just really fun. And I mean, Lynn's, you know, she's an excellent writer. And Kenny, I mean, he's just fun and a great choreographer. So, you know, if he's involved, it's going to be fun.
And I love the framework of Enter Love, because it's set at an international airport.
Yes.
In an unnamed city, right?
Yes.
So,
in the Midwest.
Yeah, somewhere in the Midwest. That
yes.
narrows it down. Not. So there's a chance for all kinds of encounters of the romantic kind?
Yes, yes. Of all different sizes, shapes, and kinds. And it was funny because we had talked about the set, and we're just going to use scaffolding. It's kind of a, you know, an open set like an airport terminal would be.
Hmm.
And Lynn has worked with some really amazingly talented people here in town. And I was thrilled for the idea of getting them on the Tot stage. But the thing that really clinched it was we were in one of our storage compartments, and we found two airliner seats. So it was meant to be.
The power of serendipity.
Yes.
What an odd thing to find in your...
Oh, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
That's the nature of theater storage,
yes.
though. It's why do we have... Fill in the blank. So then in October, can we talk about your... You kind of hinted in your season release about a partnership with a certain quirky theater artist.
Yes. I have gotten to know Ben Asequi and Q Artistry over the last couple years, and I just love him and I love their organization. And we started doing lunch once a month, and he started talking about his wonderful show Cabaret Poe, mm-hmm. which he wanted to be in a bigger theater, a bigger venue, and they had been looking at places around town which had were more expensive or had parking problems or were just too big for the show. And I always have my Tots hat on, so we started talking about doing it on the main stage, on the Crystal DeHaan main stage. And the more we talked about it, the more excited we both got about it. And it's just for us to provide our venue and our artistry, and along with the amazing people that he gets and his wonderful writing and talent, we're very excited about that.
So are Edgar Allan Poe poems used to create music?
Yes, they are. Ben has written the original music, and some of them are melancholy, which you would imagine.
Surprise.
Yes. And some of them are downright funny at Edgar Allan Poe's quirks and weirdness and genius. But it is also a show that schools can come and see. And Ben has really worked hard to get schools to come and see the show, see what a lovely view it is of Edgar Allan Poe and his genius, and he just gets better people every year to be a part of it. So again, the idea to work with and have people on our stage that are the quality of Ben and the people he works with, that was kind of an offer I couldn't refuse.
Absolutely. Speaking of quality people and talented people, let's talk about Fred Barton and Miss Gulch returns and the old Monty Python expression, and now for something completely different, certainly applies here.
Yes. Well, Brent Marty came to me and said he has been thinking about doing Miss Gulch returns again, which he has done twice at Theater on the Square over many years. And I really wasn't familiar with it, but, I mean, Brent is, you know, he's got that smile and that personality, and you just know that whatever he's involved with is going to be fun. And he started talking to me about the show, and then I did a little research, and it is so much fun. And it's perfect for him. I mean, because he's so talented. He has this amazing voice and also this sense of humor. And it's all about, it's a one-man musical. And it was written and originally performed by Fred Barton. It's more like meant for a cabaret. So it is on our cabaret stage. Mm-hmm. And it's all about Elmira Gulch, the actress who was the character portrayed, who did in The Wizard of Oz, who was the witch and the bad witch, and also the neighbor that rode the bicycle. So Brent actually rides a bicycle onto stage, and with either a stuffed or a real dog, we're not sure yet. And he has someone to play piano for him who also mixes drinks. And some of the songs include Born on a Bike, Pour Me a Man, and I Can Be an Icon Too. And it's really fun. It tells that she got a bad rap, that she loves dogs.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and that she's not just a mean woman on a bicycle with Toto in the basket.
So it might be appropriate to rewatch Wizard of Oz before coming to see this, but maybe expect a little bit of camp?
Oh, yes.
Or a lot of camp.
Yes, a lot of camp. But it's the good kind of camp because he's the perfect person to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that for the holidays, the winter holidays, you have dual programming. You're programming for naughty and nice, right?
Yes. We found last year that we did Trailer Park Christmas Musical, mm-hmm. And we had a lot of people who really enjoyed it and who loved that it was a bit edgy. And then we had a lot of people who wanted to bring their family back, but it was a little too edgy for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at Theater on the Square, we're finding our audience. And so I thought, well, what better way than to offer a naughty selection and a nice selection for the holidays? And so that's what we're doing. We're doing A Christmas Story on the Crystal DeHaan main stage. And I am directing that one. So we'll actually have the kids in it. And I love that script because this is the one, it's not the musical, it's the play. And it was written by Gene Shepherd and Bob Clark. So it's very much like the movie.
Did it come before or after the movie?
It came after the movie.
Okay.
Yes. And so it has, you know, it has the same characters that we love. But there's a narrator who, instead of hearing just his voice, you see him. And he is the older version of Ralphie. You'll shoot your eye out. So he's Ralphie telling the story about when he was young. And
oh,
so
that's
he gets
charming.
To play some of the parts, like when he goes up against the marauders, the cowboys, he gets to be in the scene as Ralphie.
Oh.
So it's really charming. And I do have to brag that Scott Robinson is going to be the narrator, who is very well known to indie stages, but he doesn't take on very many acting roles anymore. And when I read it, I just saw him because he is the quintessential, you know, he'll be a little boy for his whole life.
Mm-hmm. And Gene Shepherd's from Indiana. So
yes.
It's a kind of a patriotic thing to stage.
Yes.
But for the people who are like, I need the naughty. What's the naughty?
Well, the naughty is Eight Reindeer Monologues. And I read this just because I thought, well, there's not a lot of staging involved. We could have eight amazing actors come in and do this. And who wouldn't want to be one of the reindeer? And parts of it is just filthy, but it's hilarious. It's just where you kind of are turning all eight reindeer out to tell the scoop on their lives and Santa's and how the girl reindeer are treated differently than the boy reindeers
no.
are.
No.
And, yes.
So unfair.
I know. And some of the boy reindeers like the other boy reindeers and...
Does everybody resent Rudolph because he's the prima donna?
Yes, they're thrilled that someone's asking about them instead of just him. And there is even one that they talk about why they didn't include him in the reindeer games. And they have a pretty good reason. So, but it's really fun. And it's, again, in the Cabaret Theater. So, you know, lots of beer, lots of wine. And
lots of laughs.
And just very funny. Yes.
Sharon Gamble with Lori Raphael from TOTS Theater on the Square. You only heard about the first half of their season, but you can find out more at tots.org. That's TOTS.org.
Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Ooh la la. I have leftovers from Bastille Day.
Oh, how was that fantastic?
I know, and I have some things that, well, if not exactly French, at least require good taste.
Excellent.
For which the French are known.
Yes.
On our calendar, we call...
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Qu'est-ce que c'est? Qu'est-ce que nous fait?
Yeah. There we go.
Oh, okay. That's disturbing. Okay. We better do it in English.
Ready?
What do we do?
Well, speaking of France, someone who has lived there for a long time and has written about living there is David Sedaris.
Indeed.
See, that was a good connection.
That was.
And he is coming to Clues for an evening with David Sedaris on Wednesday, October 28th. And tickets go on sale on the 17th of July, which is right now. So you can go to the Clues Hall box office or online and get your David Sedaris tickets now.
Love it. Me talk pretty one day in French. Hey, speaking of things with good taste, the Indianapolis Museum of Art is currently accepting submissions for Project IMA Cutting Loose, which is the fourth in their series of runway shows organized by the museum. And you can find out a lot more on their website. Here's a key date you need to know. Submissions are due by August 7th at 9 p.m. Isn't that nice? They're accommodating people who might work a little later in the day. August 7th at 9 p.m. can be submitted to ProjectIMA at imamuseum.org. But before you submit your project, go online and look at the rules.
So this is hard for me to believe. Apparently Stephen Stolen has never had a solo show at the Jazz Kitchen.
What?
Until now.
How is that possible?
I know. So on Sunday, July 26th, 7 p.m. at the Jazz Kitchen up on College Avenue in Broad Ripple, Stephen is doing his first ever solo show, and he is going to be doing some lots of fun stuff and playing with Gary Walters and his trio as well, and doing all types of cool songs. Of course, you know Stephen from Stolen Moments and lots of other things. It should be a very jazzy, fun evening with Stephen Stolen. That sounds great.
He might sing some French tunes.
Oh, you never know. Ooh, la la.
Staying with our theme, you might be able to put your hands on some Beurre Blanc at Lobster Palooza, which is this Saturday at the Basile Opera Center, benefiting, surprise, the Indianapolis Opera. Lots and lots and lots of fun for an amazingly good cause and good food as well.
Well, the French call it cinema, but we just call it film or movies. And in fact, right now, the Indie Film Fest has just opened and is going on right now with lots of really cool, interesting independent films that are going to be taking place as part of that fest. Of course, you can get their full schedule at the Indie Film Fest website. One thing to check out is Andy Redwine, who's been on this show before, who's directed a number of different films and documentaries, is doing a piece called The Dean's List, where she teamed up with students of a two-week-long film project to create this film. And it's going to be running during the Crime and Punishment Shorts program at the IMA on Wednesday, July 22nd. It's one of many, many films that are part of Indie Film Fest. They're very cool.
My last item, I can guarantee you that there will be fashions from Paris represented in You Are There, That Airs Look, on view still at the Indiana Historical Society's Indiana History Center. That's on view through August 6th.
Well, that sounds delightful. Hey, you know what would be a great day trip for this weekend?
What's
Sharon?
That?
It's the Indiana Derby up in Anderson, and they're having a huge festival. Normally, the Indiana Derby takes place in the fall. This year's the first time they're doing it in July, and amongst other things, they're having a luau party and a free concert with Josh Kaufman, of course, of The Voice, and all types of other things, including, appearances by the 1954 Indiana State Champion Hoosiers, from Milan High School is going to be there, and lots of other cool things going on. Not just a horse race, but a lot of other events that are taking place all weekend long as part of the Indiana Derby Festival.
Fantastic. And you know what? There's lots more going on, but we're out of time, so don't forget you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And we'll be back next week with more things on our calendar we call
What do we do? Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Ooh la la.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Funded by the National Science Foundation, Streamlines is a place-based arts and science learning project that encourages people to explore Indianapolis's waterways. Travis DiNicola spoke with one of the organizers, Mark Kieslin, about this new endeavor.
Mark, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to chat with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Travis.
Yeah, you bet. So now you're involved in a lot of different arts projects that connect with science, that connect with nature. Of course, a lot of your work is through Da Vinci Pursuit. We're going to talk about this new project, Streamlines, in just a moment. But I think maybe to just give a little background that will help give some context to Streamlines, tell me a little bit about Da Vinci Pursuit.
Sure. So Da Vinci Pursuit seeks to, as you know, to connect artists and scientists together.
Mm-hmm.
And we really try to get people excited about learning, but not a science fact, but to be curious, to be inquire, and we use the arts to get you there.
Mm-hmm.
And so a while ago, we envisioned this idea that Indianapolis needed a science museum, needed a space. So I kind of came up with the idea of the city as actually a museum.
Using everything available.
Correct.
Inside,
so waterways,
outside, spaces.
Yeah,
not a traditional museum in terms of a building, but kind of a roving, as things come up.
Yeah, it pops
space.
Up. And then it was exciting because then we are taking things to where people live, in
mm-hmm.
their neighborhoods and that. And that doesn't mean that museums aren't important that are
mm-hmm.
in buildings, and they are for a variety of reasons. But sometimes when you're trying to interpret particularly the environment or you're trying to do things like with rivers, isn't it much better to actually be out there where it is rather than to try to recreate that as something inside?
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. To help us understand, though, give me an example or two of some project that Da Vinci Pursuit has been a part of in the past.
Right. Well, we just about a month ago
mm-hmm.
put up what we call the Kubikoscope, which
yes.
You had an interview about a year ago on. And mm-hmm. we worked with the neighborhood. But what's cool about it is it's human-powered. You bicycle it. It drives a huge array, 18 feet above the trail between Fountain Square.
This is a big interactive sculpture down
Absolutely.
Fountain Square, Quincy Owens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. The colored gels in those wheels overlap each other and create a kaleidoscope on the bicycle trail. And it just is – it's great because – it's in an area that's been a little challenged,
mm-hmm.
But the neighbors have fully embraced it, and it really I think it creates these beacons of excitement and beauty in our neighborhoods. So.
It's a really cool project. And that's sort of like a big interactive public art and experiential sculpture, if you will. But you've also done other things too, like performances or
Right.
Or
we've had you know, a group of performing artists where we coupled a harpist, Melissa Gallant, with a couple of electronic musicians and had them riff together, a couple sessions at the Chatterbox, some other places. We've been working with IU Health on some things to look at, you know, biology and cells and how those could be turned into works of art and music. Which, so not only is it beautiful to look at, you know, electron photomicrograph of something that you're seeing, but
yeah.
also at the same time, when we add a little bit of other art stuff to it, it becomes this kind of performance piece where the star is your body, which is kind of a cool idea.
That's very cool. Yeah, building a lot of bridges here, too, amongst different disciplines.
Correct.
So Streamlines. Now,
yeah.
how is Da Vinci Pursuit involved with this? Because I've been hearing about it for a while, and I know it's still under development.
Yeah, it is. We're really close. This summer is the launch point of having some pieces on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's a misunderstanding, so if I back up a little bit,
yeah.
it came out of a discussion between the Center for Urban Ecology at Butler,
mm-hmm.
myself, IUPUI, and a couple of other organizations. And we were looking at how do we learn about how people actually learn in these non-supervised places.
Okay.
We know a lot about how people learn in schools, in museums, botanical gardens. We know very, very little about how people come to learn something and what they take away when we do things in the in public art, for
okay.
instance. And not always is there a learning objective to art. But when there is, when somebody wants you to say, I want you to take this away, we anecdotally get there. So what we approached the National Science Foundation with was, could we do some pieces, performance art, actually construct something with Mary Miss, which is a part of Streamlines, and then study, in fact, what people learn from that.
Okay.
And that's what – so it becomes more – this is much more a research project, even though we had to create things to study.
Right, right.
Right? So
okay.
a dance performance by Butler's Dance with Cynthia Pratt. We have all those pieces coming together. But it's to really study, do those really make a difference in a concept – in this case, water.
Right, because they sound really cool. And
right.
And it sounds like a great idea, and this idea of doing these like interactive things. But yeah, do they make a difference? What do people get
right.
out
and
of it?
And yeah, we invest a lot of money in this assumption that, oh yeah, it makes sense to combine art and science. Oh yes, it makes sense to educate people about the waterway, and then they'll change their habits and mm-hmm. we'll improve the quality of our water and the beauty and whatever. But we don't know that for sure. We just anecdotally think that, and we do a lot of number counts. Okay. So a lot of organizations, you know, right. oh, so
well,
many people attended.
50 people experienced it.
We don't – does that really equate to they yeah. take away the message we wanted them to take away?
So the starting point is really for studying how people actually learn in these type of environments.
Right.
And then the waterways became a big part of it?
They did. Yeah. And that's because it coupled with another project that I'm involved with, which is reconnecting to our waterways, or RO,
mm-hmm.
which looks at the six major waterways through six really powerful elements: education, ecology, health and well-being, and some others.
Okay.
But what's great about that is through that lens, when we couple this research onto it, it helps create a much bigger package
mm-hmm.
So that we can look across Indianapolis and say, wow, we're talking about water, but what if we were wanting to talk about air pollution, or what if we were wanting to talk about some other area of concern for the citizens, transportation.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go about publicly educating people when we don't bring them into an institution?
So the waterways became a very convenient tool here.
Very,
for
because,
the project. Yeah.
Because we neglected them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good example. We have Indianapolis. That was its asset, but we had forgotten that. You know, most major cities don't have six major rivers, and we have six major rivers here. And those rivers were also our problem, in that they created a lot of swampland,
right.
a lot of other things. But then at some point in our past history, we decided to use them as waste receptacles.
Yeah.
And when we did that, no one wanted to be near them. They were smelly. They were mm-hmm. places that we didn't want to be. And so we turned our backs on this incredible asset that connects the city. It's the thread and lifeblood of Indianapolis.
Well, that's why the city was founded where it was in the first place.
Absolutely, right. Dead center. It was access to water. They thought they were going to be navigable, which they found out they weren't.
Right.
But it's still, that was exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And so other cities, you know, you find people wanting to be located near the water,
mm-hmm.
building their beautiful houses, and there's parks.
Retail, restaurants.
Absolutely.
And
Indianapolis
what have you.
Just absolutely.
And we really
hit it
haven't
all.
Done that at all, no.
No. So that was the initiative to do that. So Streamlines mm-hmm. comes in and says, can we do a little more than just connecting and economic development? Can we also educate people? Can we get people mm-hmm. to care and love and think that these rivers are beautiful and not beautiful, and take action to do that? And so the research then with Streamlines fits as a part of that entire puzzle.
Okay, so we've got looking at these pieces of the puzzle. We've got the research need of looking at how people learn within these unique environments.
Right.
We've got the Waterways Project, which is already set up to sort of look at, you know, how do we reconnect to our waterways?
Yep.
And then the next part of it comes in with, was it a call to artists? Was it, where's the, sort of the next step in terms of
right.
getting
so,
these projects?
Right. Yeah. So the next step was we needed to look at a variety of disciplines. So up
okay.
front, we said we needed to look at how does music inform that?
Mm-hmm.
How does dance inform that? How does poetry and the written language inform that? And then also how to exhibit-like things where we're creating an installation.
Yeah.
How does that? And then we looked not only locally, so we have a couple of those domains that are local. So the poets are local. The dance is local. But then we also looked for people that were able to do something. Mary Miss had done stuff in the past. She wanted to build on some work that she had done before. She had learned a lot from the
Now, what type of artist is Mary?
So the art is going to – this is interesting, but the art is a way of putting you in the context.
Mm-hmm.
And so the installation becomes the focal point. So she's got six locations. Mary Miss has developed six locations where she's building these sculptural pieces
okay.
that attract you and then draw you to features on the landscape.
Hmm.
So that are learning points, key learning points. So instead of you just approaching something – and not having something to know what you're learning about or what's there,
mm-hmm.
she's actually prompting that.
Okay.
So there's some labels as well as some ways of interacting with it.
They almost sound like little classrooms.
They are. They're little classrooms, but informal classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Much, again, back to that idea of what we borrow the best from what the Children's Museum and other places do with
yeah.
informal learning. Now, but we put them outside.
You also mentioned Cynthia Pratt, who's a choreographer and dancer. And so her work, I'm assuming, involves dance?
Yes, which is really cool. So we challenged Cynthia to look at each of the six waterways to come up with a theme. So a good example, over near Brookside area along Pug's Run, one of the things she's going to be doing is choreographing with her dance students. They will be the choreographers who will actually work with the public. And so there'll be hundreds of people from the neighborhoods, and they will choreograph this concept of a watershed and how they all come together to coalesce into a water. So she's got these great ideas about how people can come together and model what is kind of unseen, but using the human body as raindrops and as water flow.
Now, will that be like at an organized time and day? Or
it will be. It'll be a performance, a select day. There'll be music with it, probably live music with that. So that's a good example of how does that activate, you know, what happens when people engage in that. What's really exciting, it builds on some of her work that I think is powerful, which is this idea of she does dance choirs. And so I've never seen that until I went and saw what she does, but she actually has like an alto section, but without that being the name.
Right.
But they each have a piece, and then she combines the choir of dancers to create a more complete work. And so it's a really unique thing. That's why we worked with her. And then the other reason art.
It all sounds really fascinating because you often hear of projects that are sort of community-building activities that often involve, let's say, murals or something. That's kind of a traditional approach. But to use dance and physical performance in a community-building activity is a very different type of approach.
That's right. And we like to say, both not only in the Da Vinci Pursuit, but what we do in Roe and what we're doing in Streamlines, is that we do things with community, not for the community. And that's a big difference. So we're used to mounting productions for the community. We go into the community and we perform for them, and there's a role for that. But this is very different in that it does community building because it's with. And so people have input into it, and they're a part, physically a part of what we do.
Very cool. Mark, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second because twice you've mentioned the six waterways.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to go through my head and count which ones they are. So obviously we've got the White River.
White River.
And Pogue's Run.
Pogue's Run.
What else do we have?
Fall Creek.
Fall Creek.
And Pleasant Run.
Pleasant Run. Okay.
The Canal.
The Canal.
And Eagle Creek.
And Eagle Creek. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So those all count as different elements.
They all count. Yeah. And in some of our history, I'm getting old enough to remember having grown up here, but some of ours we remember that in between those low areas was a lot of swampland, which we've reclaimed and put buildings on. But as growing up as a child, and a lot of people in Indianapolis will remember, you couldn't go certain areas because it was swamp.
Now there's still some areas that flood quite a bit,
they
too.
They do, and like today, unfortunately.
We've talked about a visual art, sort of three-dimensional sculptural type of classroom component. We've talked about a dance component. Give me one other idea of what this is going to be like as these different projects that are part of Streamlines evolve and are unveiled really over the next couple months.
Right. The other one that's really exciting is Michael Kaufman. As you know, he does a lot of music stuff. He's been curating and working with a set of artists who are actually creating music with the water.
Okay.
And so it's exciting. They're capturing sounds of nature along the waterway, they're capturing the water, and they're creating these works that'll be actually performed along the waterways at these destination sites. And so it's a little more than just the ambient sound catching, but it's this way of combining music and voice and other pieces together. So that's another great example where the water becomes, and the science of the water becomes, the inspiration for a musical piece.
It becomes part of the piece. Now, are the artists responsible for the research in terms of how people are learning from that, or that's sort of another part of the project?
No, that's another part. So Da Vinci Pursuit was charged, and our part of the National Science Foundation grant was to do the research on how artists and scientists develop a common language and how we come together. We have New Knowledge Corp, who is a national, if not international, group that does evaluation on things, and they're doing the primary research on what people are learning and that part.
Excellent.
And so, so you add all those components, so we really have professionals working at all levels. The other one last unique thing on this whole thing is that the artists get the science from the consultants we have that are science people in the community that we data mine through DaVinci Pursuit through our Art Science Roundtable. And so we discover people that can work together. We couple them. Hmm. And so the artist gets to understand at a simplified way what the science is, and then their work becomes in response to an interpretation of that.
That's excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Again, building lots of bridges.
Lots of bridges.
Over water.
Yeah.
Mark, thanks so much for coming into Art of the Matter today. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about how this project does evolve over the next couple months, and we'll keep in touch with that.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Travis DiNicola with Mark Kiesling. Kiesling is the director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, which is one of the partners creating the arts and science project Streamlines. You can find out more about Streamlines at streamlines.org, just like it sounds, streamlines.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll chat with Jim May about his new job as executive director of the Hoosier Salon.
And in anticipation of the release of the movie Paper Towns, we'll replay an interview from a few years back that I did with author John Green.
I'll also talk with an author, Tamara Winfrey Harris, about her new book, The Sisters Are All Right. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.